Strangers and Aliens, episode 74.
Strangers and Aliens, summer movie series.
Man of Steel. Welcome to Strangers and Aliens. I'm Ben Avery, and I am here to talk about a movie with my two friends, Steve MacDonald and Dr. Jace O'Neill. Gentlemen.
Wow, I feel like we're on a political discussion.
Well, I wouldn't have introduced you as friends, probably, if that was the case, though.
We sort of are. It's a very political movie.
Just want to let you know that we have to be friends, because I'm missing the NBA draft for you guys.
And don't let it be said we don't appreciate it.
Because
I don't think Steve does.
I don't think Steve quite understands what the NBA stands for and draft. And basketball is the one with the hoop and the ball.
The hoop. Oh, instead of hockey with the puck and a ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. The puck and the ball. So, yeah, we are here after a long break, actually, guys. How are you guys doing?
I missed you guys.
Yeah, we didn't record for about 3 weeks. I think it is 3 weeks since we recorded our last episode.
It's weird.
Whose fault is that?
Now,
probably mine.
It's mine. This was my fault. The episode we just posted, I call the lost episode, because it was like the sheep. It was lost, but it's now found. So,
and it's one of 99 episodes that we will have done by our 99th episode.
Yeah, and it's the one that got lost. So
that makes complete sense.
It almost does. It almost does. So, yeah, so I was way at a camp where I was teaching kids and doing stuff like that. And while I was there, I could not find the file of the episode we had recorded. And I had to send a contrite email to Dr. Jace and Steve saying, please forgive me. I've lost two entire episodes. One which will be coming up soon, because I found that too. But I found it, so I didn't need their forgiveness.
It was like an X file or something.
It was weird. But it's found. And you guys, if you're listening right now, you probably listened to our Secret Identities episode. That's the one. And now we're all back. And we're all together to talk about Man of Steel. But before we do, any update from you guys? Dr. Jace? Anything cool going on?
As far as light?
Yeah. Real quick.
Well, no, we're still pregnant and everything's still going well.
Yay.
And you're in the summer now, but you're teaching still?
I am, yes.
Yeah. And, okay, good. And, Steve, anything fun?
My bus driving is done for the year.
Because school's out.
Because school's out, but yeah. I guess, you know, I can drive if they want me to do special stuff over the summer. So they're still at.
That's cool.
Yeah, now I get to spend time with my kiddies.
Hey, I started a new podcast.
I know, awesome.
Called Welcome to Level 7 about the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series is coming out. So
yeah.
Welcome to Level7.com. And I am doing it with Daniel Butcher, who is still alive, even though he lives with an evil robot in his house.
That's right.
So really, that question was in order to set you up to promote the new podcast.
No, the question was hopefully there'd be something interesting going on with you guys. But,
well, actually, that does remind me. I actually started a new podcast as well called Welcome to Level 6, which is all about the Marvel animated universe.
Ooh, yeah.
That's interesting.
From like the 90s and before.
Because I started a new podcast too, and it's just entitled My New Podcast Without Steve and Ben, just because I have another podcast.
Well, that was originally going to be the title. But then I realized since I was in it, I couldn't use that title.
That wouldn't have been
Truth in Advertising.
Yeah. So. I wanted to do Welcome to Level 1, but that would just be the Captain America serial from the 1940s.
And yeah, that's
it
the
would
lowest,
get boring quick.
Lowest level, yeah.
Yeah.
So
more like level 0.
I'm already bored.
Oh boy. Well, what a rip-roaring start we've gotten to. So guys,
a lot of editing for this episode.
So here's this movie, Man of Steel. This is one of our summer movie series, and after I saw this movie, as soon as I saw it, I said, I need to talk about this with Steve and Dr. Jace.
Yeah.
And I had to wait a week and a half. No, yeah. Longer.
You only had to wait a week, a half a week.
2 weeks for me to talk to you guys about this movie.
Half a week.
Yeah.
And Dr. Jace, did you see it opening weekend too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So here's how this works. First half of this episode, spoiler free. Second half, spoiler filled. You've been warned. You will be warned. And so let's talk about the movie. Dr. Jace, you saw it opening weekend. What was the theater like when you saw it?
You mean the people, the audience?
Yeah. What kind of audience were you with?
My wife and I went, we got a babysitter, and we went actually Friday morning because I don't like big crowds for big movies because it gets too distracting for me.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Man 3, the lady talking on her phone and texting her phone. I wanted to be unchristian towards her. Mm-hmm. But so it was fairly, I mean, there were still people there, but it was very comfortably absent of lots of people.
Did you see it in 3D or regular?
No, I don't like 3D. I think most of 3D is a waste, and it also gives me a headache.
So, Steve, you saw it like yesterday, right?
A couple days ago, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, what was your theater-going experience like?
Well, it was interesting. I went with a buddy of mine. The last time we went to a movie together was Superman Returns. So it seemed like every time they reboot Superman, he and I will go see it. It's kind of funny. we got there like in time to get seats, but the seats that I usually would get, like a good distance away and like, you know, easily access to get out, because sometimes I bring my kids, didn't this time. But those seats weren't available. So I sat actually closer than I usually do, mm-hmm. although not the actual very front. But so I like reclined much more than I usually do in a movie. And I think it actually added to the film a little bit because the characters looked a little larger than usual. You know, the angle you were at made them, I think, seem a little taller. And it was kind of interesting. But not 3D. You know, I'm getting older. And with my eyesight the way it is, I mean, it's like 2.5D at best with those glasses. So that, it just stuck with the 2D. And it was I heard someone say that you shouldn't see it in 2D and 3D because some of the 3D effects were cheesy. But I can't speak to that because I didn't see them.
I've heard some of that too about 3D, that with this movie, it just didn't feel right. The 3D didn't work. But I saw it. Have you guys heard of this thing? It's something like 4D or some weird thing. I saw it in a theater that's equipped for 4D seats that like move you around and rumble and stuff like that. I didn't sit in one of those seats, but I could feel them moving behind me. That was kind of a distracting experience. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, well, 4D's been around for a long time, but like one of the original conceptions of 4D was smell. But smell didn't go over so very well because of war movies, I think, would have been bad. So they started to do other things like chairs moving and, you know, they have little air shoots out at your neck when spiders are in the movie and things like that.
Yeah. Well, it was weird because the theater normally will rumble from the surround sound. But
I remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, there was Sensoround. And I went to see Battlestar Galactica, the movie, in Sensoround in a theater. And this might be a spoiler, so I'm warning people, okay? One of the Battlestars, not the Galactica, a different one, okay? I'll just to leave the mystery in there. I'll just leave it up. Who knows which one? I'm not going to say. But when it exploded, sorry, spoiler alert, it explodes. When it exploded,
I took off my earphones so I wouldn't get any spoilers. Is it good to come back yet?
No, they're all coming. So anyway, the sound was so loud. I remember like shouting in the middle of this thing exploding, and I couldn't hear my own voice, and I was like, "Wow, Sensoround is awesome." And then they stopped using Sensoround.
Yeah, because it was like making people's ears bleed and stuff.
Yeah.
Are you back?
Have you seen? Yeah, you can come back now. Have you seen the episode of The Simpsons where they're doing the THX sound system thing and like their flesh peels back and stuff like that? Okay, so guys, let's grade this movie then. This is spoiler free, this section of the podcast. But what grade would you give overall to Man of Steel, Dr. Jace?
Oh, that's a good question.
You want to go last?
Yeah, let me think about it for a second.
All right, Steve.
B.
A B? Solid, yeah. B. Nice.
A B.
I would give it an A minus. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Jace?
Yeah, I probably would go with the A minus as well.
Okay.
But I say that simply because I think that it set up the second one to have a strong possibility to be an A if they do it really well, or an A plus if they do it well.
Yeah, there's definitely setup for another movie. We could talk about that when we get to that section. But I thought, no, well, it's a franchise movie. There's going to be setup for a sequel. Although I was surprised that there wasn't as much as there was. But so, what were your expectations going in then, guys?
Well, you know, I've been so busy that I haven't had time for my expectations to build. But I had heard good rumblings from, you know, the studio execs and rumors and different things like that. So I went in with pretty much, you know, no expectations other than I want to see this movie. But I was sitting there going, you know, I know that Nolan was involved, but I don't expect it to be as good as the Dark Knight trilogy. At the same time, you know, one of the reasons why is because I think it's hard to tell a Superman movie. It's very, very hard. To me, it's so much easier to tell a really good Batman movie than it is to tell a really good Superman movie. So I figured that it would be better than Superman Returns and Superman 3 and 4, but I didn't.
You're not setting the bar too high there with 3 and 4.
but I knew I was expecting it to be maybe around Iron Man levels, the original Iron Man level.
So completely awesome.
Well, for Iron Man was like I always compare it to a rock concert. It was kind of like that, but it had more depth than Iron Man 1.
So, Steve, what were your expectations?
Everything I had seen was like over the top Superman action. So I expected that. I guess in retrospect, I sort of expected, you know, more of the mythos in there as well. The Daily Planet and stuff like that, but I had no like real, like, you know, I didn't say, you know, well, you know, Lois Lane better be X, Y, or Z, or else I'm not gonna, you know, I mean, you know. So when everything happened with the Daily Planet on film, I was just like, oh, that's interesting, oh, that's kind of cool, you know. And you know, there's some spoiler stuff that I can talk about in the second part, but you know, even that stuff was sort of like, you know, oh well. You know, I can see why they did this or that. So, yeah. So my expectations were big, over the top action, and you know.
You feel like it delivered.
In a lot of ways, yeah. In some ways that I'll get into in the part two, maybe we'll talk about more specifics. But.
I'll say my expectations kept getting lower and lower. Because I just kept thinking about Zack Snyder and Sucker Punch and 300. I haven't seen Watchmen, but...
Don't.
Well, I have it. I own it. I keep thinking I just should see it just because it's a geek movie, but I can't bring myself to watch it. So.
Don't watch it with other people in the room then. Don't subject them to that.
But anyway, I just kept thinking, oh, this is... It could be good. It could be good. And my expectations just kept getting lower and lower. And it pretty much hit where I thought it was going to hit, with basically beautiful looking and then themes that get brought up but never really deliver but still get you thinking. And that's one thing with, like, Sucker Punch. That movie, they try to say one thing with the script, but then, like, the movie itself completely contradicts the theme and the message of what they're trying to say. And I was expecting that, and I kind of got that. But on the whole, it was a really, I was not expecting it to be quite as good as it ended up being. So,
wow.
So what'd you think of the story, guys?
Well, we're familiar with the story, you know, at least a part of it. I actually liked how they started things off, you know, on Superman's home world.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that what it did for me in a movie setting for the first time was it established very strongly that he is an alien, that he's not from this world. And seeing that, and not just referring to it, not just seeing the parents and, you know, maybe the lab, but to see a good portion of the community in movie form, the way they showed it was, I thought, really cool. And it was, for me, it was not just like a superhero movie, but it was also, wow, this is a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely a science fiction movie.
Yeah.
And I'll also say, you bring up the thing about an alien. In the first Superman Richard Donner movie, he's giving an interview to Lois Lane. She just asked him where he comes from. He says he's from another world. And then she asks him what color her underwear is. I mean, she's talking to the biggest story ever.
Yeah.
And it's nothing. You know, they make nothing of it. Now, that's not the story they're telling. Right. You know, I'm okay with that. But, yeah, this one definitely, in that Nolan way, kind of takes a look at the things that are a little more realistic.
Yeah, well, what it does is, whereas they really play on genre. Whereas Batman was a crime drama, a detective type story, this is a science fiction film. And I think they stuck to that genre fairly well.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I like the way they did that.
Yeah. He stuck to the genre.
So the story itself is, it's solid, you know, and it's that, here's their first Superman story, right?
Yeah.
It's basically, and I don't think this is a spoiler, but to say that this is Superman Begins.
Basically.
And you're getting,
I think what it does is if they want to create a Justice League in the universe of the Dark Knight, not that Nolan or Christian Bale would come back, but if they want to kind of keep that mythos, so to speak, going on, this was a tremendous pivot film. All of a sudden, you could actually see it happening. For the first time, you could sit there and go, oh, I could imagine Batman with super, almost godlike creatures with this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, in a way, how Thor did a pivot to Avengers a little bit.
Well, and they had a bigger job with Superman and Batman than they did with Thor and Iron Man. I feel like the Thor and Iron Man universes or storylines could kind of go together a little bit better and a little bit easier. But with Superman, yeah, I think they did set something up that they could do.
Yeah.
With that. Steve, story-wise, how'd you feel about it? Especially the storytelling style that they had going on here? With all, like, the flashbacks and stuff like that.
I think, you know, in comic books, a lot of times you get, you know, the flashback. You get sometimes the entire issue that's a flashback. You know, stuff like that. So I didn't feel it was that much out of place. And you were getting information when you needed it. It wasn't all front loaded.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I didn't have any problem with that. I sort of divide the story into two different segments, one that works and one that doesn't. And we can talk about the one that doesn't in part two because it's a little bit more spoilery. But if you take the movie as if it really did happen, it's satisfying. If you take a step back and say, you know, did they have to tell this story in this way, then I think different questions can be asked and it can be answered a couple different ways. But I don't think it needed to have that resolution. And again, I'll go into that in part two, because it would spoil a lot.
So let's talk visuals then. And there won't be as many spoilers. Oh, did you have something else, Dr. Jace?
No. I had something to say on special effects.
All right, let's talk special effects then. What were you going to say?
I was simply going to say, if I take the special effects without any consideration of the story, I mean, they were really good. I mean, there were one or two things I was wondering about. But I think the very first impression of seeing Superman's home world, when I saw it, I was like, this is going to be a fun movie, because this is totally going against my expectation. Was not expecting this. And all the way throughout, the special effects were, I thought, done fairly well. There's some things with the fighting that I will say on the second part, I don't want to spoil anything, that I would take issue with, but it looked good. In my opinion, I liked the whole look of it. I know this kind of delves into the style, but I think it's kind of hard to speak on all the special effects without talking about the style.
Yeah, go ahead and lump them together.
I liked the more gritty style, even some of the tough choices that Superman had to make. I thought it worked. I was surprised that this gritty story worked, because Superman is this squeaky clean character. And now, finally, I feel like there's a character that can be relatable to the modern audience.
Steve?
When you see superpowered people hitting each other, and it's in a place where that power can't be contained, sometimes movies, you lose that sense of it. You know? In this, it's all over the top. I'm not spoiling it if I just say, you know, when buildings collapse and when things are massively destroyed, and when you see someone, you know, who is stronger than the material that they're going through multiple buildings, you know, it's nothing you haven't seen in the comic books, but now you're seeing it in real life, and you know, it's the special effects make it happen.
Let me ask you guys this. I did not realize this. His cape is digital. He was never wearing that cape.
Yeah, I knew that.
I did not. And even after someone said that, I said, well, I'm going to look for this when I see this again, if I get a chance to. But it never once crossed my mind that it was anything other than cloth. It moved like cloth. Yeah. And now that I think about it, okay, it did things really conveniently and really well choreographed, as far as like when he's floating over somebody's head and it's mm-hmm. like that perfect regal movement or whatever. But
yeah.
Going through it the first time, it never once distracted me from the movie. Never once. I was surprised.
Yeah, it was
and
good.
I think most of the effects were like that. This is on par with, I don't even know what to put it on par with. You know, it's on par with Star Trek. It's on par with
Avengers.
Avengers, yeah. I mean, it's on
Special
par with
wise,
the
yeah.
big movies, mm-hmm. yeah, with these effects. And style-wise, I like Snyder's style more so than his storytelling. But, I mean, you can't deny he does things that are visually stunning and pretty.
No, he really does. He does that really well. I agree with you. I don't think he tells a full, complete story. Although I do think overall he did a pretty good job on this, and perhaps Nolan's influence helped with that. I don't know.
My understanding is that Nolan helped toward the beginning, but it was really more David Goyer. In fact, my understanding is that David Goyer had the initial idea for this and kind of got the gig by going through Nolan and Warner Brothers saying, "Well, you're Christopher Nolan, so." Yeah, okay. We'll go with what your little guy's saying there.
Yeah.
And
I believe it. Goyer is good.
I was surprised. Because, I mean, Goyer also gave us, you know, David Hasselhoff's Nick Fury and and Blade and some other movies that I wouldn't have trusted him with something
Blade?
Like this. Yeah, yeah.
You didn't like Blade?
I didn't like the first Blade or the third one. I couldn't tell you if Goyer did the third one, but...
But part of that, though, I mean, he didn't direct those.
No. So
it's hard to really know, because you could take a great script or concept and put it in the hands of either a bad director or a producer who messes things up and completely ruin a good script.
And you notice I left out Blade 2 by saying, when I was saying I didn't like those movies. Blade 2 I liked, but I think that was more Del Toro than anything else. Kind of rising above the material. But he also gave us Ghost Rider. I think Goyer was involved in Ghost Rider. And there were things about Ghost Rider I liked, but I wouldn't say that Ghost Rider is a good movie.
Put it this way. You know how we did the voiceover for C.S. Lewis's book?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We all agree C.S. Lewis is a pretty good writer, right?
Yeah.
In our hands, we made him look like an amateur.
Actually, I think it'd be the opposite. He actually made us look far better than we deserve.
Right, but still, if that was someone's first exposure to his, they'd be like, "What is this really cheap ripoff radio drama?"
Yeah,
that's exactly what happens in the films. You could take a really awesome script, and I'm not saying any of those were awesome scripts. I don't know. I didn't read them, and how much was changed after he submitted it. But you could really make it look and not do it well and it not be the writer's fault.
But when we're talking about themes and stuff like that, some of the blame goes to Goyer and some of the blame will go to Snyder. And I don't know how to divide the blame out. It's going to be left at both of their feet. I think that a lot of the realism and some of the things like that do come from Nolan's influence, but I don't think that Nolan had as much influence as we expected him to have in this.
No, but if they wanted this to have some sort of bridge with the Dark Knight universe, then you know the producer said, we want something in a vein of Dark Knight for Superman. You know,
and,
if they wanted
and do you think they got that then? Do you think it works?
I do. This is what I would hope, because I heard a rumor that, or actually, you know, Joss Whedon did an interview, and he said when he's done with Avengers, which is what, 2015, is that when does the second one come out?
I have a date somewhere that I can look.
Anyways, that he said that the one franchise he would love to get his hands on was Batman. So I was thinking, well, if you did one more Superman movie and then did a Justice League movie with all the folks and introduced a new Batman, that would give Joss Whedon enough time to be able to do Batman. I'm all for that strategy. And I think that they did it. I think I could believe that the Dark Knight Bruce Wayne lived in the same universe as the Man of Steel Superman.
I could believe it too. I do wonder, and we'll talk about this toward the end when we're talking about where this franchise could go. I do wonder if they will bring in just a different Batman, just because there's time separating them and leaving that trilogy to stand on its own. But it could go either way. It really could. I feel like it could anyway.
Well, I mean, I don't envision Nolan or Christian Bale coming back. I mean, I would love if they did. But it would be a very simple rewrite. A Superman being shows up on the planet and threatens the planet. I think that would pull Bruce Wayne out of retirement.
Yeah, he'd be looking into it for sure. Definitely. And he'd probably be looking into Lois Lane to find out about it.
Yeah, so what did you guys think about the acting and the casting and all that?
I felt like it was all solid. I felt like Lois Lane, she was a good Lois Lane. Henry Cavill, however you say his name, was a solid Kal-El, Clark Kent, Superman. And I don't remember the guy's name who played Zod. Michael Shannon,
Michael Shannon.
He was great. I liked him a lot because he was so different, but at first he was so different that I had a hard time, because Zod is, again, I can't remember the actor's name from Superman 2, but This is a different Zod. Definitely a different take on it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on the tip of my tongue, too.
Terrence Stamp.
Yeah, yeah. So, everything was good. I didn't feel like there were any, like... There was no Christopher Reeve who just embodied a role. But at the same time, Christopher Reeve couldn't have played this Superman. This is a different take. Very different take.
Yeah.
What'd you think, Steve, about the acting?
For the most part, I didn't have much of a problem with it. Zod, though, in the end, he carried it off. But all through the movie, there were parts where I was like, there was something. Like the way he was saying certain words and things like that. Sort of like how, what's his name, who played Bane? He sort of like...
Tom Hardy.
He like took that character, and you know it's just a throwaway character in the end, but he gave it something with the way he was speaking, the choices, the choices of inflection and things like that. With Zod, it was different. The way he said certain things, it didn't have the gravitas that Tom Hardy did as Bane. So in a little ways, it was taking me out of.
I feel like that's part of what I liked about Zod, though, was that he was a military man. He was shouting orders. He did a lot of shouting. He was a very shouty character. But he wasn't Terrence Stamp, this quiet, seething British guy who you could just tell is evil because he has that accent and... He carries himself in such a way that he's not a big man, Terrence Stamp, but he is menacing. And Michael Shannon was menacing because he was loud and had purpose.
Well, that and the fact that he was strong, he could match physically, mm-hmm. and he was a trained warrior kind of thing. So I bought it for that reason. Yeah. I would say, as far as casting goes, or as far as acting goes, I thought the acting was overall strong. I think the casting was very good. Kevin Costner, perfect Jonathan Kent.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence Fishburne, I thought, was really smart with Perry White. Russell Crowe was a great Jor-El. Diane Lane, of course, good. I thought Henry did a good Superman, especially this kind of Superman. The way this story was, I thought he did a very good job, especially, you know, when he got mad. He thought, you can mess with my mother. You know, I really like that part. Michael Shannon, I thought, did well. The only one, not that she did a bad job, but I just didn't like the casting, was Amy Adams for Lois Lane. Maybe it's because we didn't get to see Lois really in her element. She wasn't a huge part of this film. She was just there. And so I don't know. I didn't really care for Amy Adams.
I disagree. You saw her, especially at the beginning, where she's just taking charge and pushing her way through like a reporter does. And then with Perry White, you see her, you know, doing what reporters do. And especially Perry White's, you know, turn where he's suspending her. You know, but with a wink and a nod, and you know, I think
think she did a bad job. I guess I don't buy her as Lois Lane.
That's definitely played different than Margot Kidder.
Yeah, you know, but even then,
or like even the cartoon Super or Lois Lane, or Terry Hatcher.
I don't know what it was. It's just of all the actresses out there to play Lois Lane, I wouldn't have ever thought of Amy Adams.
Yeah, again, I heard that she's the one who was willing to do it without seeing a script. And I don't know how true that is, but so they were able to sign her before the script was ready. That's what I've heard. So, speaking then what's her name? Diane Lane. They did a fantastic job of making her look like the crazy cat lady when she
nice
when they flash forward into the present day. Oh my goodness. She's a beautiful woman, and then they turned her into the Simpsons cat lady. But you want to talk vaguely about some of the themes here and if they hit the mark or not?
You know, I think, you know, you have metaphorically, not allegorically, kind of a Christ-like figure. He's 33 years old, gives up his life, so to speak, to, you know, save everyone else.
I feel like, again, Snyder can tell a pretty story, but I think he has a hard time with telling a meaningful story and kind of getting down to knowing the meat of what he's actually doing. You know, this is a story about, like you said, maybe a Christ figure, but more so about someone figuring out who he is and how to do what's right. And there's just some weird choices about in the movie about what's right and what's wrong and that kind of thing. But,
well, I also, there's a themes of fatherhood, you know, whether it be biological father or spiritual or surrogate father. You know, there's this relationship of who am I and a looking to the father. Am I Jor-El's son or am I Jonathan's Kent's son? And, you know, that's kind of a, if you look deeply into that, that becomes a challenging thing when Superman is put in a place where he has to choose to some degree. That's an interesting story.
I like the fatherhood themes, and along with that, then you have Zod, who, you know, he doesn't really have a father, and but he has a purpose, and I think with Kal-El, with Clark, he's looking to his fathers for his purpose, which is another theme. Is just, what is my place in this world? And I think one of the things that resounds about Superman, even the Richard Donner Superman, is where do I belong?
Well, there's a lot of nature versus nurture.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even like Russell Crowe's Jor-El, there's almost, I mean, to some degree, like, you know, because there's always, whenever you look at Superman, there's always this correlation of a Christ-like figure. At the same time, if you look at Superman as if we're Superman, we are empowered by the sun. Our father leads us, even he's there by the, you know, the spirit, the Jor-El kind of being there at different parts to help. I mean, there's all these different symbolisms of you can overcome through the power of the sun. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of stuff there that you could drill down if you wanted to.
And they definitely, with the title Man of Steel, you know, they're focusing on the man part of Superman. And that's the way I like it. You said that if you look at Superman as us, that's really the way I look at Superman a lot of times, is he's telling us, they're telling a story of, you know, to inspire us to be, you know, to use what we have and to sacrifice. And I really see more Superman as a Christian symbol than as a Christ symbol in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
Steve, what do you think thematically?
Thematically, I think the Christian elements are just sort of ham-fisted at best. And then if you want to think about it as if, you know, they're really trying to tell a, you know, a Christ story here, then, you know, it almost veers into the blasphemous if they're really serious about what they're doing, which I hope they're not. But it, you know, it doesn't
which part,
add.
Which part did you think was blasphemous?
Well, it was actually worse with Superman Returns, when they were, you know, acting out the, like, the Pieta scene with the, you know, his mom after his spaceship crashed after he went to try to find Krypton. And he falls out of it into her arms and things like that. And him coming out of the hospital 3 days after he supposedly dies and things like that. This one, it's a little bit more subtle. But, you know, making sure that he mentions that it's 33 years that he's alive. A lot of people think Jesus was exactly 33 when, you know, he started his ministry. And, you know, going into the church and the scenes behind him.
Most think he was 30 when he started and 33 when he died.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And the scene in the church when the scenes in the behind him are almost more important than the camera on his face in the middle.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil the scene, so I won't tell you what they're talking about.
Yeah.
There's a shot of the priest where there's a cross right behind him, and it looks like his shoulder is the hill that the cross is standing on.
Yeah.
And then there's another part where right behind Clark Kent, right behind Kal-El, there's,
right. Well, there's
Christ at the Garden of Gethsemane, stained glass, right there. Perfect framing.
There is absolutely no doubt that they intentionally were trying to reach out to the Christian community. And I know this because myself and many other pastors were contacted they actually made Man of Steel videos, trailers, workbooks for pastors to be able to use in illustrative sermons for Father's Day.
Ridiculous.
And so, you know, they were purposefully reaching out to the Christian community.
Well, Steve, you say ridiculous. Let's talk about this for just a second before we finish up this part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? I mean, why do you say ridiculous? Because this is actually a conversation that came up on Facebook too.
Right. What I mean by the word is it is readily available for ridicule.
But why?
Because it's
I don't mean what does the word mean. I mean, why do you use it right here?
First of all, it's coming from Hollywood. Which does Hollywood really care about the spiritual well-being of?
But it's not coming from Hollywood. It's coming from writers in Hollywood who are Christians and who are part of Christian organizations that have been approached by people from Hollywood to create this stuff.
So I don't know who did it.
Well, I just told you who did it. His name's Craig Detweiler.
But I mean, I don't know personally. I don't know their names. I don't know their.
Well, I just told you their name.
What's their names?
Craig Detweiler. He works for the writing program, or he worked for the writing program that I went to, the Christian writing program. So, I mean, they contacted Christian people to do this. It's not Hollywood creating it.
I don't know him. But it's not people said, hey, this movie has a lot of really cool spiritual themes. Why don't we write something? And independent of the Hollywood, connection to it. It was Hollywood's impetus. It was the people behind the movie wanting to sell more tickets to Christians. You know, I mean, Greg Detweiler might be a great Christian. He might be fantastic. He might, you know, see really deep things and all that stuff. But the thing is, he didn't do it on his own will, did he? Did he choose to do it?
To me, that's irrelevant. You know, if obviously Hollywood's a business, they have to make money.
Mm-hmm.
But what I see this as a victory, because if they start to see Christians as the Christian folks as legitimate consumers, then to me that says that there's a high possibility that they'll try to make more entertainment that is appealing to Christians rather than crap that we won't want. So for me, whether you think a church should use this stuff or not, I've seen churches use stuff like this to mm-hmm. tell really good stories and put it in a framework to give illustrations. And I think that I think this could be a good thing if Hollywood starts to see Christians as legitimate part of their market. I'm all for more films that would appeal to Christians with deeper themes. Now,
right,
if they
this doesn't have Christian themes. It has themes that they're shoehorning into the realm of Christianity. They're, you know, taking stuff and saying, oh, well, he's powered by, you know, Ben said he's powered by the sun, S-U-N, but we're powered by the sun, S-O-N, you know?
Steve, you don't know that. You're assuming that. You can't, there's no possible way you can know their motive.
Let me ask you this, Steve. How is it different, other than that Hollywood paid them to, how is this different from what we're doing here?
Well, first of all, it makes money. They're trying to make money.
Well, okay, so
we're not.
Other than that, though,
if we could make money, we wouldn't be making money.
Perhaps. But the thing is, even though we're not making money, we're still going to put out show after show. If Superman, if Man of Steel doesn't make money, that's it. Superman Returns wasn't seen as a commercial success. There wasn't a sequel.
So it's consumerism that you're upset
about. But we're talking about specifically the people who were hired to create the materials. How is that different from what we're doing? Other than that they actually made money doing it and we're losing money doing it.
Because we weren't hired to create this material.
Other than that, though, is there a difference?
What do you mean other than that? I mean, these people were hired to create the material.
Would it be wrong if we were making money doing this?
No. Beyond that. Okay.
If we took our episodes and showed them around to pastors and said, look at the interesting stuff that we're saying. Look at the parallels we're drawing. You should use this in sermons. And here, here's a $15 price tag on it or whatever.
Oh, they didn't sell any of this Man of Steel material.
No, I got it for free.
That was free. All of it was free. In fact, they were giving away tickets to the movie.
Yeah, all I got was free. And there was tickets to the movies to try to get dads into church.
Mm-hmm. But it's all for publicity. It's all to get more people in the seats.
Is that the problem then? Is that your problem with it?
Because if they really cared about spiritual well-being of people, you know, okay, well, why don't you just give free tickets to everybody?
So let me get this straight, Steve. You write a best-selling book, and it is a book that has lots of themes. It is a fiction, but you have some kind of relationship with churches that it would minister to. The themes could be examples used in kids' ministries, and you wouldn't promote that?
That's different. I'm writing it for a Christian audience and making sure that it has good Christian theology and it's based on sound doctrine. I doubt that the writers of this film had any of that in mind.
And I'll tell you, I agree with that. But
it's story is not. I mean, obviously, if they're preaching, you know, within the context of the story, something that's anti the Bible, but it's a story. It's not. It doesn't have theology. It's a story.
Everything has theology. Every story has theology. Even if it's a story that doesn't have God in it, that's the theology you're preaching.
Every story has a worldview. I would agree. Every story has a worldview.
Every story has a theology. Every story is backed, if you get down to the brass tacks, by how that person understands and reacts to theology.
So you want every story to be more allegorical, completely related to Scripture in order for it to have viable spiritual themes?
I would say if a story is from the Bible, then it has spiritual themes, okay? If it's written specifically by a Christian to instruct, then it could have spiritual themes. But if it's written by people who are...
You don't know these people and you're making a judgment call. So if you found out, I mean, I don't have any idea if these writers are Christians or if any people have no idea if anybody's involved is a Christian, but to assume that they're not, you know, it'd be one thing if the story was innately blasphemous or innately anti-family or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that in this film.
Although Dr. Jace, to that point, I do have, as far as the Christian themes in this movie, they get them wrong. I mean, it just...
There's tons of...
Yeah.
But there's a lot of discussion that I'm seeing coming out of it about those things, about hope. And, you know, he says the symbol on his chest stands for hope. Well, this movie does not accurately give a picture of hope at all, but it gets you talking about and thinking about that. And that's where I'm totally okay with what they're doing with this movie, with the push for pastors, is because it's, hey, let's talk about these themes that are in this movie that you're going to probably see anyway. And if no one in my church is going to see that movie, I'm probably not going to use this material for sure. But yeah, I I kind of look at what they're doing, though, as kind of what we do, where we're taking these things that are not from a scriptural foundation, but we're picking out these ideas and looking at them and saying, well, let's look at this and let's see where it gets it wrong and see where it gets it right. But also, you know, what can we learn from these stories that are from outside?
All right. But we would never say, you know, these episodes would be something that, you know, pastors should take and we could repackage them to have pastors preach sermons on them.
Maybe you know? Would never say that, but
I would never say we wouldn't.
I might.
Why would we?
Because you know, I think we do come up with some good ideas. And
but it might have good ideas, but what we talk about, by and large, doesn't have anything to do with the gospel. It doesn't have anything to do with scripture. It has to do with, you know, our takes on theology and our takes on pop culture. You know, I mean, there
aren't
any movies.
I don't see the problem with what you're saying.
Because you don't preach a sermon on, you know, good ideas. You don't preach a sermon on...
You preach a sermon on greed, which we do an episode about greed. You preach a sermon on hope, which we've talked about in other episodes about different things.
Right, but you preach a sermon on the scripture. You preach a sermon on greed as it deals with scripture, as it deals with doctrine and theology.
This is a philosophy of ministry issue here. See, Ben, where a lot of churches do topical, like greed or love, and they talk about different scriptures in the Bible, most of the time, my interpretation of what Steve says a lot of times comes from a Reformed background where they focus primarily on expository preaching, where they literally take one scripture and they focus most of it on one scripture.
Right.
And so his view is that, well, how would that even relate? Because if you're only doing one scripture, whereas I know a lot of the churches you go to, Ben, have narrative sermons, have topical sermons, and
illustrative sermons.
Exactly. Whereas most Reformed churches only have expository preaching by and large. And so they don't use as much of that stuff that as a storyteller you would be familiar with in other types of sermons.
Yeah, and in that Facebook conversation I kind of got called out on that because you know, that's my background and that's the way I do my own messages.
I think if I have a lot of respect for expository preaching, although when I look at scripture, I see a lot of narrative preaching. I see a lot of topical preaching. So I think that if it's done well, all three can work, done with respect. But there are some people that are, I have friends who are very narrow-minded that anything that is not expository is of the devil, which Jesus told narrative stories in the parables. You know, if you even take Matthew and Mark, Matthew is more chronological, whereas Mark is more topical. It's not, things aren't done in order. So there's grounds for all those types of preaching if it's done responsibly, in my opinion.
And my last word about this thing, and then Steve, since we kind of ganged up on you, we'll give you the last word on this conversation here, but...
Wait, I was playing moderator there. I didn't gang up on him. I was trying to be the interpreter there.
Oh, well, earlier on.
Interpreter of English.
I'm just going to pretend that you're on my side.
Oh, okay. All right.
But my take on this is that it did bring up a lot of controversy in Christian circles. And I kind of saw that happening online. I saw people, you know, really getting militant on either side. Not necessarily in that Facebook conversation, but in other places. So, Steve.
You know what? You want, I have something to say when you're done.
I am done.
What I would say is that a lot of the guys I talked to were really excited about it because, you know, a lot of movies, people don't look past the surface. This one, they actually did. They were like, you know, it made them, as Christians, when they watched it, they started to think, you know, it came around Father's Day, that they could make a difference, and the same father type kind of themes that we were talking about. Now, they don't go into the depth of, you know, let's be honest, a lot of spiritualism in movies is more Gnostic than Christian, but the average person doesn't know what Gnosticism is. So I thought the movie did a good job because it got you thinking deeper than a lot of other films do.
Oh, and I went and saw it with the – I was at that camp, and I went and saw it with the camp pastor that Friday after he was done. We had a long conversation, even though it was very late at night, just about what was this that we just saw. And it sparked a ton of conversation between he and I. It was really interesting and really actually a lot of fun, and which is why I wanted to talk about with you guys. But Steve, last word on this controversy, and then we'll move on into something a little more fun.
I'll say my last word on it is, you know, I don't think that it's a good way to present the movie, to promote the movie. And I don't think it works well even with other, like The Passion of the Christ and things like that, where you have someone from, you know, non-Protestant viewpoint of Scripture, and marketing the thing to, you know, Protestant pastors and things like that. I think it's, there's a problem with that. With movies like, I don't know, the ones that the, you know, the Facing the Giants and Fireproof and Courageous, the ones like that, they're evangelistic movies. They're movies whose sole purpose is evangelism. Well, and then entertainment, you know, the, everything else is secondary. And, you know, you might see them as failed movies. You might see them as, you know, the cinematic masterpieces. But the thing is, they're made for evangelism. And when you have stuff come out of them that's evangelistic, that makes sense.
Steve, I think I can agree with you on some things. I can agree that it could, if this becomes a thing, a pattern, I could see where films that have really bad messages try to corrupt. And but I also see the advantages. And let me just give you an example. We live in a culture that is very biblically illiterate. And so I don't believe that we should dumb things down. But I also believe we have – I mean, I feel as a pastor to have a role to try to interpret things for people who don't – I mean, I have people in the church who don't – they just found out that Jesus' parents, earthly parents, were Joseph and Mary. You know, these people don't know Jonah and the whale. So sometimes to illustrate a point that you are explaining in Scripture, you give a parallel or example of, say, Aesop's Fables or Mother Goose or something that everybody knows. Well, in our culture nowadays, movies are the stories that everyone know. And so when you can share, like in this film when this happened, not – that this film is a direct correlation of Scripture, but you can give them an idea to help them connect the dots, and so therefore they understand a little bit better of what the Scripture is saying
and actually
how it relates.
And I agree to that, except to the point where you don't use it as the jumping off point. You don't start a conversation with, you know, hey, did you see that new Superman movie? Did you see all the spiritual parallels in it? Do you see how the gospel is represented in it? You don't do that. You start.
I have.
Well, it depends on how you have different people who preach different ways. Some people start with a story and then go to the scripture, which is the meat of it. They kind of interpret and then they go to the scripture, which is the meat. Some people start with the scripture and then explain afterwards with the point is, though, if you are speaking to a Christian audience, then they will stick around a little bit longer. But if you're speaking to an audience that is often unchurched, you have to grab their attention right away.
And so that's what it is from an education standpoint. It's that attention grabber.
No, so I would agree that
if the sermon is just, you know, all it is about a movie and you don't anchor it at all, I think you have issues.
I think we can all agree to that.
Yeah. It does give me flashbacks to The Matrix. And actually, it's a very similar movie, but it gives me flashbacks to The Matrix where everyone was just using that movie to the point where it almost felt like some youth pastors were – it was an anointed movie. You know, yeah. This was God's gift from Hollywood. Yeah. The Matrix, finally a movie that explains all of Christianity. It just...
and the problem was is that you could have had a lot more. There were some people that were like, oh, it's a Christian metaphor, and other people were like, no, it's a different metaphor. But when they made 2 and 3, it was obviously they did not know what they were making in the first one, because it totally blew the first one away.
Yeah. Well, we aren't going to talk about those 2 and 3. Yeah.
Anyway,
so okay, we said this. We've seen the movies. We rate it A-, Ben and I, and then Steve, you rate it as a B. So where do you guys rank this in all of the Superman movies? Where does it fit? just under Superman Returns, or
I rank this number
second best after the original Superman.
Me too. Although Superman 2 kind of gets in close.
It's real close, but no.
Yeah. What about you, Dr. Chase?
I'd agree. I would say the first one is still my favorite of all time. I thought this one did a very good job. I thought it had a harder job to do presenting Superman in a modern culture. But what I think it did so well is what the franchise needed, and that is it is an intro into another franchise that will last. At least another movie.
Yeah. In Superman Returns, Lois Lane wrote an article about, do we need Superman?
Yeah.
And that was a dangerous question to ask, because that's what the studio was asking, is can our culture have that character? And it feels like they kind of found a way to make him work in a modern context.
Can I bring up a pointless quibble?
Yeah. Is it a spoiler quibble?
No.
Then go for it.
But what... In the context of the film only, obviously. But what in the context of the film gave it a reason to call this movie Man of Steel? Obviously, Man of Steel is another name for Superman. But if you take that name out of this film, where do you get it?
The fact that he was thrown through buildings and he still came out unbent, maybe?
Yeah, this is a man... I mean, the metaphor Man of Steel comes from Superman being, you know, like steel, a strong material, made of strong material.
But in the film, there's no, you know, equalizing. There's nothing talked about steel. There's no, hey, you know, my skin is like steel. There's nothing. You don't get
all the Krypton tech is steel. I mean, it's that metallic.
It's metallic, but is it steel? Who knows?
Well,
yeah, but the Dark Knight, and Batman Begins, it doesn't go, by the way, Batman is beginning.
Or Batman's like a knight.
But you get the reason for his name being Batman, and it's his story is beginning. So it makes sense. In this, The Man of Steel, it's only a title given to the movie because he's called the Man of Steel in other things. In this movie,
because he's strong as steel. He got beat up, and
but he's stronger than steel. He's stronger than steel. He goes through steel.
It's a metaphor, Steve. It's a metaphor.
But the metaphor isn't explained in the film.
It doesn't have to be, because it's a metaphor.
Okay, so how does it stand against other movies this summer?
Yeah, we're putting this up against Star Trek Into Darkness. We're putting this up against Iron Man 3. What else? What else have we talked about?
After Earth.
After Earth, yeah.
Epic.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I haven't seen Monsters University yet either.
So where would you guys put this?
I'm going to put it under Star Trek, but over After Earth and Iron Man 3. And I might even... I'm more likely probably to watch this one again before I watch Star Trek again. So it could even switch places with Star Trek.
I'd put it definitely over Iron Man 3. I'd have to put it under Star Trek for some things that we can go into during the spoiler section.
What about you?
Yeah, I would agree with you guys. I think that it's... I don't know. I think it's pretty even with Star Trek. I'd have to watch them both again. Coming out of Man of Steel, I probably would have put it over Star Trek, which is a big thing for me. But they're close. I'd have to watch them again. But it's definitely better than Iron Man 3, Oblivion, or After Earth.
Oblivion. Oh, Oblivion. I might almost put it above Star Trek simply for the reason there's a lot more to talk about and a lot more to kind of work through and kind of like, well, what are they saying? What do they want to say? What do they actually say?
Okay, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Better villain, Michael Shannon or Benedict Cumberbatch?
Oh, don't ask that. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
No question.
Yeah. He's straight up awesome.
Yeah.
Not that Michael Shannon was bad.
Awesome. He was kind of leaning over to the left awesome.
Yeah, no. Shannon is good.
If you look at the character and the way he played that character, by the end of the movie, you completely understand everything that he's doing. And it's not like you sympathize with him, but you sort of you mourn for what happened. I'll get into more of it during spoilers. Yeah. And you know, his character is a wonderful cautionary example. You know, it's not a Lex Luthor who is just reacting to, you know, Superman who's stealing his thunder or something like that. You know, it makes sense. And, you know, by the end of the movie, you really have a sense of, wow, okay, that villain made sense. And Michael Shannon played him very well.
Well, let's ask this then. If people have not seen the movie yet, do you recommend it? And who do you recommend it to? And then we'll move into spoilers, because I really want to get into spoilers.
Well, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone who I wouldn't bring children to it.
No, it's definitely not for kids.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate.
And not just because of the action stuff, but maybe some stuff that I don't know if it's spoilery.
There's some dialogue stuff that's crude language.
Some dialogue that I don't want to take the time to explain to my son or daughter what it means.
And why you probably shouldn't say that to people.
Right. I would say, you know, adults who like Superman movies, they'd probably have a really good time with it.
I don't know about that. I've seen about half and half. I've seen a lot of people against this movie, very highly against this movie.
I don't know. I think they're nitpicking. I could say, well, I didn't like the way that Zod, you know, his word choices and stuff. So
no, it's they don't like the character of Superman. They like if they come down to if it was named Ultraman, which no, that wouldn't work because that's an actual guy. Right. If it was named Super Duper Awesome Guy, maybe they'd accept it. But this is not Superman. This is not my Superman. This is not Superman.
That's the thing.
And I'm seeing a lot of that from especially older fans.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is the older Superman probably wouldn't work too well in this audience, in this culture right now, the way things are. They keep calling it the post 9/11 culture.
Yeah, and oh man, there's a lot of 9/11 imagery going on in basically every summer movie now.
Yeah.
But Dr. Jason, what about you? Who do you recommend it to? Do you recommend it?
I'd recommend it to grown-ups who... you know, I would say research on kidsinmind.com or whatever to check if there's anything in there that you would find offensive before you see it. You know, I think adults or young adults.
All right. And I also recommend it. I recommend it to people who want to think about their movie, but who also want to eat popcorn during action sequences. So.
I would even go so far to say if for some horrible reason someone has not heard of Superman or has never really got into the whole, you know, mythos or seen all the movies or all that stuff, if you like science fiction, go see this movie and watch it as a science fiction movie instead of a superhero movie.
Yeah, there were moments in this movie where I felt a real Spielberg vibe and moments where I felt a real George Lucas vibe. I mean... Yeah, it's definitely a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, the first part of it, I sort of wish they would do something deeper with and, you know, have the world of Krypton or something like that, because seeing the way the animals and the tech worked together and stuff like that, and the interesting structure they have to their society, you know, as flawed as it may be, to see people, you know, what happened before the first scene of the movie, where, you know, what made them make the choices that, and that, you know, led up to that. What was all that thinking? Where did they get the information? Where did, you know, all that stuff is keenly interesting to me. And to see it played out on a place where they don't have, you know, that would be an interesting thing. They're all Kryptonians. They're not flying around Krypton. I mean, it's interesting because some retellings of the story have it as a planet of Superman. Mm-hmm. And then this one baby gets, you know, sent to Earth, and he also has superpowers, et cetera, et cetera. This one, it's just another world. And they fly around in ships and on the backs of animals and things. And
it's an alien world, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So speaking of choices, you now have the choice to turn us off, go see the movie, then come back and turn this back on, because we are going to spoil this movie. You guys ready to spoil it?
Yeah.
All right.
Don't sound too excited. All right.
Yeah.
Good. You've heard the spoiler music, so if you're listening, you have seen this movie, or you don't care that you're going to get spoiled. Let's talk about some specific things here, guys. For example, Jonathan Kent telling Clark, maybe you should have let the people on the bus, the children on the bus, die. What do you guys think about this stuff that Kal-El is working through with his two parents, his two fathers?
I think I took that as a throwaway, like, you know, was I supposed to let them die? I don't know, maybe. Like, the dad is just kind of, what I liked about it is it's a very human response.
Yeah.
Because he obviously doesn't want the kids to die, but at the same time, he's afraid that his son could be in danger. And yeah. So I think most parents, you know, they don't want to say, yes, let him die. At the same time, their primary concern is their kid. So for me, I didn't take it as, yeah, let him die. Let him burn or drown.
No.
It was a father who was immensely concerned with the well-being of his son.
And he's not perfect Pa Kent, which sometimes you get, you know, the perfect Pa Kent. I think, what's his name on Smallville? You know, a lot of times he was the voice of wisdom. That's not his character in this movie. You know, he's not that, he's not the all-knowing, what I say is always right type of character. He's guessing.
Yeah.
You know, he wants what's best for his son.
They're learning it as they go as parents. Yeah. I mean, this is new to them.
He's way over his head. And I don't see it as a throwaway either. I see it as he's saying maybe because if people find out who Clark is and what he is, it changes everything. It changes the entire world because of, like he said, you are the answer to are we alone in the universe?
And it's not just will bad people respond to him, but the truth was is his son wasn't ready to be in the limelight, and that's true father wisdom, because he goes whatever man you decide to be, good or bad, it's going to change the world. And so he knew his son wasn't ready then, and that's why he gave his life, because his son was not ready. And had his son been revealed early on, who knows, you know, if they would have attacked him. And then he would have gotten bitter because they kept coming after him. He could have become a very different person. And so I think that his father was showing real wisdom. His son was not ready for the limelight.
But he says maybe because he knows, you know, Clark saw the short term, this is what I have to do right now, this is right. And, you know, Jonathan can't say, no, you shouldn't have, but then at the same time, it could cause wars, you know, it could cause, you know, religions to fall and countries to rise up to try and get this, you know, alien technology and this alien physiology. And, yeah, you said two things, though, Dr. Jace, that I want to come back to. And one is Pa Kent's death, and the other is what he said about no matter who you are, good or bad. you know, you're going to change the world. Should we talk about his death first?
Sure.
What'd you think of this, guys? Oh, he died for the dog. I wish it hadn't been the dog.
I know.
I wish it had been anything other than the dog. They help, you know, I'm picturing it. They could have helped the kid. Pa hands the kid to Clark. Clark goes to the bridge. Pa twists his ankle following Clark and falls. And then that's where, you know, it was the dog.
That's the truth. You know what's interesting? Is it's probably the most realistic thing in the whole film. Because if people will tell you, I have a friend who works disaster scenes all the time. People run back for their animals. They do. In a film, I understand from a film perspective, it would make more sense for him to save a person or something like that. But, you know,
it made me cringe. And then on the other hand, it made me say, well, this is ridiculous, but maybe that's the point, is that this shouldn't have happened. He put himself in a spot that he shouldn't have been in. And this does happen in real life, you know, but I just didn't like it.
I think it relates to, you know, when people live on farms and that their animals become part of the family, mm-hmm. and people in cities do too, but when you live, you know, and you're away from all these different people, to me, it fits with the character, because when you live on a farm, you're often further away from everyone else. So your animals, except for the ones you plan on eating, become very much a part of the family.
Or else you have Charlotte's Web with Wilbur. No, Dad, don't do it.
No, but I think beyond the dog, I think the sacrifice speaks to the depth in which Jonathan Kent, his son, is not ready.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he would rather sacrifice himself so that his son would have a chance to, one, survive, but also to become a better man.
Okay, so this line is definitely a thematic line that you brought up, Dr. Jace. That line of, no matter who you are or what you do, you're going to change the world, good or bad. Do you feel like the film lived up to that theme? How do you feel that the film?
I think it's hard, because when you have a character like Superman, you have decades of stories of what Superman should be like, and so I think that was the battle repeatedly with him, is what is he going to be like? He wants to be, he's wanting to be good, and he's wanting to do the right thing. He doesn't always know what the right thing is. You know, which is one of the things I did like about the movie, was that when he was looking for answers, where does he go? He goes to the church,
mm-hmm.
and they chose. And this is a very conscious decision. They chose a church that didn't just have this ambiguous visuals. They chose a church with Jesus picture, stained glass pictures of Jesus, and they showed him, and they didn't, and the priest. You know, he didn't. The advice is sometimes faith comes before trust, and the truth is that's really true. A lot of times you have to have faith before you have trust.
I liked that line. I liked it a lot.
And I thought for the first time there was actually like a priest pastor scene that wasn't completely. Now, of course, I would love to have him to say more, but I liked that it was real. He was scared. This was the man that the aliens were talking about. At the same time, despite his fear, he finally gets out, you know, you have to have faith.
He gave good advice, and it wasn't played for laughs, although it was, with some of the imagery, a little laughable.
But, yeah.
It is interesting. I mean, they chose that stained glass window. This is that Gethsemane moment for Clark Kent. Do I let this cup pass before me, kind of thing? And it's spot on. It's obvious. Mm-hmm. Let's spell this out in big red letters for the kids in the audience. But
for me, Ben, I think, yes, the film lived up to that. But I don't think that line of whether you become a good man or a bad man or change the world, I don't think that's just a movie theme. At least I hope not. I think it is this trilogy or franchise theme, because he's going to be tested again. We know at some point Lex Luthor is going to enter the scene, and there's going to be all sorts of tests. So yes, I do feel that it met up to the theme, but I expect more of that.
So let's, what do you think about the ending in context of that line? Which, and this is another thing, this is a big thing. This is where Mark Waid, who writes Superman, stood up and was going to leave the theater when Superman killed Zod.
I don't know. You know,
just what do you think about the end? I mean,
anybody that's a Superman fan goes, Superman would not have done that. At the same time, the way the scene is written, or at least shot, Superman has to decide between an innocent family,
yeah,
and someone who's intentionally causing harm,
trying to kill them.
Yeah, and but here's
my problem with it in the context of the movie.
Yeah, okay. I agree. If he had just, you know, just thrown him into the sun or to something else and just killed him or whatever, I think it would have been an issue. But that's the thing, is Superman has to be... That's what conflict is. That's what movies are about, is putting Superman in a situation where he has to make tough choices.
Yeah,
what I didn't like about the ending was, outside of the, you know, yes, it works in the context of the movie, it didn't need to be in the movie. There wasn't, it wasn't like, you know, wow, we're telling a Superman story, wow, we're going to have him kill Zod. It's not like it was just a given, you know?
Zod could have gone with the other Kryptonians. That could have been the end of the movie.
No, no, no.
Yeah, it could have been a lot of different things.
This will be fit what I think will happen, go from here, because it fits right here. I think that General Zod had to die. Why? Well, perhaps he didn't have to die, but he had to be contained somehow. Because I think that Lex Luthor is going to get a hold of his body and try to examine weaknesses to attack Superman.
I think the sequel is going to be Lex not just being Lex, but also being, I'm Earth's savior against this alien menace.
Right.
My biggest issue with the film, and the problem is that I know it's an issue. I don't know how you could come up with a solution, a good one at least. Well, I do. I have one solution. But I felt like I wanted a final showdown between General Zod and Superman. And when they gave it to me, I was excited.
You got it in spades for 29 minutes.
But then I'm sitting there going, there's more people who have died in this wrestling match than probably all the other times combined. And I'm sitting there thinking, people are dying. Buildings are falling. This whole thing is going crazy. Why wouldn't Superman fly out of the city so that other people won't harm him? Or at the very least, you know, because I know that you have to have the fighting in context so that you can actually see the damage. But he's fighting on Main Street in Smallville. He's fighting in the city with no... You know, at least they did this better in the Smallville fight. But in the city, you didn't really see a lot of concern that other people... That he was trying to help other people or trying... Like, if he was trying to get away and General Zod would pull him back, or if the building was falling and he saw people dying and Superman had to save them, and then that build up to the final decision where he has to take out Zod because he's killing people, I felt that that final period would have been an exclamation point had they shown a bigger reaction and that Superman was actually engaged and worried that people were dying in those buildings that they're flying through.
Yeah, because there were literally five people that Superman actually shows concern for. There's the family that's going to be killed, and then there's Lois Lane who's falling out of the ship. And I'm of two minds, like you, Dr. Jace. Part of me, it was so... The destruction was just so omnipresent. It was just... There was just so much of it. And it was just kept happening and happening and happening. On the other hand, I do look at this as I was thinking about it. This is Superman Begins. This is where he's never fought anything before. He's not ready for that. And he's having to do this on the fly. Not a pun intended. But then also with the snapping of the neck, again, Superman Begins. This is where he does this. He sees no other way out. He makes this choice. I hope they come back to it in the next movie. And he questions himself and asks himself.
I think they have to.
Was it the right thing? And because when going back to that theme, you know, good or bad, you're going to change the world. Well, yeah, he did change the world. Did he make the right choice? Was there another way? He has to. He has to ask himself that.
They have to, because the truth is, you know, Ben, Steve, and I, if there was somebody coming to harm our families or what have you, or say they're after us, in the middle of a populated area and they're shooting at us and we're shooting back, we know enough. We're not hugely combat-ready folks. I know enough that if I know they're coming after me, rather than letting everyone else die, let's go off in the middle of nowhere. So then if there is death, then at least it's just a few people and not hundreds or thousands of people.
He has no idea. And yes, we would go and do that, except this, you know, the fight was in real time. You know, there was no breather. And believe me, you can feel that there was no chance to breathe because you're just getting the stimulus, this constant stimulus of movement and action and explosions and this and that. But I feel like, well, did he have time to react? And I don't know. It's Superman Begins. It's definitely Superman Begins. And Zod, he is a warrior. Superman, he's not.
But what I didn't like about them using this in the first movie is what do you do for the second and
third
movies?
Where do you go from there?
You know, I mean, it's sort of like the Death Star. You know, okay, we used the Death Star in the first movie. Oh, we can make two more movies? Well, let's see. What can we use as in the third movie?
How about a bigger Death Star?
A bigger Death Star. The Death Star 2. I mean, what are you going to do? Have, like, Zod's clone? And, I mean, it's too much emotional impact for the first movie. You know, you have Superman doing something that typically he doesn't do. And, you know, Mark Waid getting up in arms about it and other people getting up in arms about it. Other people being able to put it into context. But the thing is, it's something you don't see him doing. And to take that and put it in the first movie, where do you go?
The Zod thing had to be in the first movie.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
But the Metropolis stuff, my goodness. You know, yeah, where do they go from there? And
I mean, if
it's the Avengers problem, too. How could Iron Man 3 live up to the Avengers?
Well, it could have, but
it could have, but it set a really high bar.
Right, but it could have. What they could have done is, you know, Superman jury-rigs some sort of a, you know, temporary phantom zone or something like that. The technology's there, he's smart, all that stuff. And then in the second movie, you know, Lex is trying to, you know, pull that information, pull that guy out so he can examine him, and, you know, maybe by the end of the second movie he does, and, you know, the guy's wreaking havoc. And then in the third movie, you have that whole last scene where you can do that now. Superman has tried the other way. You know, he was able to stop him. He was able to put the brakes on for a little while. And now Zod is coming back and he's about to, you know, push the button on the whole planet or something like that. And it's not just a couple of people, you know.
But in that later movie, though, Steve, in that later movie, you're going to have Superman find a different way. I hope that this is what we're looking at. He didn't find the other way, and in the second movie, he finds another way. He has
Because of the way it was written.
Yeah.
And that's one of the problems I have with the movie.
Oh, there's lots of things he could have done. He could have easily, you know, I was expecting him to do one of two things. First, spin around the world backwards in time so that all the destruction never happened.
Yeah.
The second thing I expected him to do was to actually get in front of the heat vision and take it himself. And then, you know,
it would have been a little messianic, don't you think?
Absolutely. But it would have been better in some ways. But then to have the ending the way it was, it felt wrong, but it also felt right. It felt like, okay, this is the story they're telling. It fits the story they're telling. It doesn't fit the Superman I know, but this is Superman Begins. This is him learning. That's my hope anyway. Guys, this episode is fairly long as we expected. Are there any things you guys would like to touch on before we close down and actually do our one piece of feedback that we have?
Yeah, I just have one question, and you can only say one name.
One name?
I want to know who you want to play Lex Luthor.
Oh, man. Okay. Are you ready for this? One name.
Can it be a first name and a last name, or does it have to be like Jim?
That counts as one name.
Yes,
Jim. I would like Jim to play.
What do you think about this, Dr. J's? Patrick Stewart.
Ooh. Oh, I love Patrick Stewart, and I think Patrick Stewart would be great at anything. It depends on how they view Lex Luthor. If they got Patrick Stewart, I would do cartwheels because, let's just face it, he makes any movie, any project he's in a step up. Even if it's a bad project, he makes it a step up.
Can we please, please, please put that on our Strangers and Aliens YouTube channel, which has nothing else on it right now? Please?
Well, the problem that I have with him playing Lex Luthor is that he's Professor X, you know? So you have
someone
who is already known for playing a superhero role.
But Cyclops was in Superman Returns.
Yeah, but that's Cyclops.
All right, Steve, who's your guy?
What was he playing in Superman Returns?
Who are you going to put in as
Lex? He was like
one
of the main characters.
Who was he?
He was Lois Lane's fiancé.
Husband. Yes.
Okay, but he wasn't a superhero.
No.
He wasn't a bad guy.
No.
He was, you know.
But this is why he died so stupid in X3.
So you're upset with Ryan Reynolds playing Green Lantern and Deadpool?
Or Chris Evans playing Human Torch and Captain America?
Yeah, I did have a problem with it, although, you know, he was able to pull it off. And I'm not saying Patrick Stewart couldn't pull it off. You know, he could. But the thing is, I think what I don't like before a movie comes out is when someone who's established as one character plays another slightly similar physically looking character. You know, it just, I would rather have it just be someone different.
I would be okay with Patrick Stewart. I'm trying to debate between two people right now.
Let's hear it.
Steve, do you have one?
I was going to, what immediately came to mind was Tom Hardy.
That's exactly that. Thank you. You made my
Are
job
you serious?
So much easier. Yeah.
But Patrick Hardy played, or Thomas Hardy played Patrick Stewart in.
Yeah. But the thing is, I can't say that because I'm casting a bad guy as another
Bane.
Bad guy.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and a super bad guy.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'll let you say Tom Hardy because that was my other guy.
Tom Hardy.
You already did. Too late.
Who's your guy, Dr. Jace?
My guy after Tom Hardy would be Leonardo DiCaprio.
As a young
Lex Luthor.
Yeah, maybe.
No,
I don't think he'll ever shave his head. He's already played. He played the Great Gatsby. He's got the rich.
No, I haven't seen that movie. Did he? Is that what you're basing this on?
I'm basing it on the fact that he's a pretty good actor, and he knows how to play powerful characters.
Maybe. I mean, that would definitely go against your expectation.
Well, with Smallville, they cast a really young guy against expectation. You just make him bald and make him... I would be surprised if they made Lex Luthor an older guy.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think he has to be... Honestly, he has to be someone the same age as Superman. They need to be basically contemporaries and equals. But all right, well, can I read our one little bit of feedback? Actually, two.
Sure.
One is from Twitter, and that's from my friend John. I said, we're talking about Man of Steel. Do you have anything to add, anything you want to give to the conversation? And my friend John said, I want one of those House of L jump drives. Of course, it'd need to be retrofitted as a USB to work on my devices. But what'd you think of the tech? That was so cool. That metallic tech. Oh, and then when they're telling the story of Krypton and they show the ship taking Superman, it looks like the ship from the first movie.
It was fantastic the way they did that. It was just so old school. I felt like I was watching, you know, as if it was done in the 50s or the 40s or something.
All right.
And they made it believable, too. That's the thing. They made that that you know, pixelated metal or whatever you want to call it, that tech worked.
They had so many Easter eggs, and I thought that was an obvious one. But what did you guys think of the cameo or supposed cameo of Christopher Reeve?
I did not see that. What happened? What was it?
I saw it in the movie, and I go, did I just see what I thought I saw? And then I finally started seeing when Superman, at the end, when he flies up into the beam and his face gets kind of distorted, there's a frame where it looks like he's Christopher Reeve.
Really?
Yeah. And I saw it when the movie came out, and I'm like, did I just see? And then finally, I actually saw a frame where it shows that. Or it looks like it's that. I haven't seen anybody say that, yes, that's definitely, but it looks suspiciously like Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, the friend that I went with also saw that.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. And the other thing about the technology, I can't remember what these are called, but you know those things where you put your hand on it and it's like made out of all these needles or nails or whatever?
Yeah.
And like you put, that's what it reminded me of. I felt like I was looking at those things you get at like Walmart or you see them in museums where you put your face on it, give everyone a cold.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff Schaefer says this. I'm going to read this and then guys be ready with your final word about this movie and then we will be done. Jeff Schaefer says, hi guys. I've only been listening to you guys for a couple months, but since you asked for our thoughts on Man of Steel, I thought I'd give them to you with a little winky emoticon. Wink. First of all, from a technical standpoint, I would say it's a near-perfect movie, and I only say near because I don't believe in a perfect movie. The effects, story, plot, acting, direction, etc. were all outstanding. I love the pacing and that they didn't give the whole plotting growing up in Smallville origin, opting instead to show only the most formative experiences in flashback to get us quickly through. For the record, it still got a little dusty in the theater a couple places. Dang that Kevin Costner. I love that Cavill didn't need dialogue to tell us how he was feeling. You could see it on his face and in his eyes. The action sequences were by far the best I've seen in any superhero movie. I felt the weight of those buildings coming down and had serious 9/11 flashbacks. The gravity of what Zod was trying to do was incredibly oppressive, especially once the world builder came out. Anyway, all the action was superb and the effects flawless. Where I love the movie the most is in the big ideas. Not just the Christ metaphor that everyone is shouting from the rooftops, which I think is rather overblown. Nothing like Marlon Brando's, "So I have sent them to you, my only son," eye roll. No, I love the massive free will versus determinism debate. Zod's genetic determinism absolves him of all evil acts, no matter how heinous, because that's what he was born to do. Kal-El, on the other hand, chooses his destiny in siding with moral behavior and protecting humanity. There's a lot of other things as well, but this is getting too long already. To answer some of the gripes, yes, Superman should have taken it outside and away from the city, but honestly, I don't know if he could have. Zod may very likely have caused even more mayhem in Superman's absence after the World Builder was destroyed. Another issue is that Kal-El is very green in this. He didn't have the 12 years of study with his computer dad like Reeve did in the original. And he's got a lot of learning and growing up to do in his newfound superhero-ness. Anyway, I haven't seen a movie that made me think like this since The Matrix, my favorite movie that also happens to have a lot of big ideas and Christ metaphor to boot. I think this is really my second favorite movie ever, even though I've only seen it twice. I am going to see it again this weekend. Well, that about does it. Thanks for the phenomenal podcast and keep up the great work. Another wink, Jeff. Okay, the free will versus determinism, there's two things there. Did you guys catch the line where... the Ursa stand-in, Ursa and Non, were in this movie, even though they didn't have that name, says, we have the evolutionary advantage because we don't have morality.
Right.
I thought, it's true. You think, if you're thinking of it from an evolutionary standpoint, that's a evolutionary weakness to want to care for and protect the weak.
Mm-hmm.
But then also the determinism, Zod was created to do what? To protect and to be a military leader. He was groomed to do that. And what does he do with it? He takes over. Everything that they've done, everyone in their society is raised and groomed to be what they're supposed to be. And all of them except for Jor-El is doing a horrible job of it. No one's doing their job well. The military leaders are trying to take over. The political leaders are just nincompoops. It's, you know, this society that they've created, it's a failure.
Yeah.
Total failure.
And that's one of the things where, you know, to see a backstory movie on, you know, Jor-El and the quest for the baby or whatever. I don't know. it would be fantastic because you could get into all these debates about, you know, evolutionary thinking and evolutionary ideas and how
natural selection, true,
how we could possibly have come out the way we did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was just, when I heard the line, I was like, you know, oh no, you know, they're doing something silly here. But the way it plays out, they actually, you know, it was actually a victory over evolution, you know, saying that, you know, we took charge of our thing and we made ourselves the pinnacle. And here we are, you know, a human being takes out, what is her name? Kira, whatever.
Ursa. You know,
and, Ursa, that's right.
Not in this movie. Her name's not Ursa in this movie.
Right. Right. But still, it would be a fantastic example, a fantastic examination of that whole mindset.
We haven't even talked about the eugenics stuff. Oh my goodness. There's just so much we could talk about. I need a final word. Dr. Jace, Steve, what's your final thought about this movie?
Awesome. I'd say top notch. You know, there's one of these days I'm going to sit down and do my whole like top 100 list. But
top 100 movies of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully not as a sermon series, though.
No.
Steve, you got a final word?
I really wish they didn't make the silly, needless references to things in the movie, which made it, you know, audibly to the point where I can't take my kids or can't have my kids watch it without me editing it or something stupid like that. It would have been a perfectly fine movie for kids to see, outside
of
all the violence.
Nap snacking at the end.
Some people don't like the violence, but still, if they've seen other movies, if they've seen Avengers, if they've seen Captain America, whatever, you know, Captain America didn't have great language in some of the places, but still, they could have just taken these things out and made it better. I think there was one actual swear in there. So,
I agree. I agree that there are some things that just didn't need to be in there. You know, even if they were trying to make it grittier, they didn't have to do it.
But I think
they didn't have to do it that way.
I think this movie is Zack Snyder pulling back a little bit too, though, from what other movies I've seen from him. He's pulling back the violence, pulling back the content, and that.
But. That was pulling back violence?
Oh, yeah, for him.
The overt stuff. Yeah, I understand that.
All right. And my last word is this, and it's similar to my thoughts about Star Trek. Star Trek Into Darkness was a remake of Star Trek 2 and 3. Man of Steel is a remake of Superman 1 and 2. It is a almost beat-for-beat remake. You start on Krypton. Krypton destroyed. Zod is put into the prison. Superman grows up on Earth, Zod, Ursa, and Non come and try to take over. It is a remake. If not a remake, then a remix. But think about it. So that said, do you guys want to sign off? Or are we allowed to sign off? Sci-Fi Christian does that, don't they?
I don't know.
Good night.
Kryptonite.
Good night, Kryptonite.
It rhymed.
I like that. And Godspeed. Thanks for listening to the Strangers and Aliens Summer Movie Series. You can email us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-804-37-ALIEN. That's 1-804-372-5436. We'd love to hear from you. You can also go to our website, strangersandaliens.com, leave a comment on the blog, or check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/strangersandaliens. We're also on Twitter, Strange and Alien. Check us out.